Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios. It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Good Thursday morning. It is 9 a.m. here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 a.m., 99.1 FM. It is that day, the official start of the NCAA tournament, round of 64. We made it. It gets started today, and it is going to be a lot of fun. We've got a lot of great games for you, including some games you can hear right here on ESPN Pensacola, including starting just a couple of hours from now at 11:15. You can hear Creighton and Louisville. We'll also have, after that, at 2:15, McNeese and Clemson. Then later on this evening at 6:10, we'll have Arkansas and Kansas. And then tonight, the nightcap, UC San Diego taking on the Michigan Wolverines. All four of those games you can hear with the Westwood One coverage of the NCAA tournament right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. And we're going to have you covered each and every day of NCAA tournament. We will have games for you right here on ESPN. So just tune in. Like I said, if you're at work right now, we got you back, right? So when those games get started at 11 o'clock, you can't bring up that screen to watch it because your boss likes to hover. Just pop in a little earbud, you know, you got some AirPods with you, pop in one of those, and just download the ESPN Pensacola app on your phone, or you can listen off the website, or if you got a little, like, transistor radio or something at your desk, maybe you can connect to that somehow and just have a little earbud plugged into that as you're working throughout the day, and you can keep up to date on those games. Like I said, coming up at 11:15, we'll get it started with Creighton and Louisville. That should be a good one to get us started. An 8 and a 9 seed taking each other on there to get us really the first game of the round of 64 is looking like it's going to be a good one. Creighton and Louisville, and we'll talk about that one coming up a little later. Right now, I do want to talk about Xavier and Texas. That was one of our final four in play-in games that we had last night, which, of course, you could hear both of those games right here on ESPN Pensacola. And, man, that was a both games last night were pretty good, pretty fun to watch. It wasn't kind of like the night before where we had one really good game and then the other one in UNC and San Diego State was just an absolute stinker of a game that was pretty much over as soon as it got tipped off. I mean, that game wasn't even close at all. So last night we had two good ones. Xavier coming back to beat Texas 86-80. You look at this game for Xavier, Marcus Foster and Zach Fremantle had 37 of Xavier's 86 points. They were in foul trouble. Now, and that's the crazy thing, is that Xavier battled back from being down 13 in foul trouble and came back to win by 6 points. That is usually when you're in foul trouble, you don't win the game. Ask Tennessee in the SEC championship game. Had multiple players in foul trouble. And it really affected how they played the last few minutes of that game because they couldn't have their best players on the court because they had three or four of them, in foul trouble. And that affected the way that they played because had they came back and gone into overtime, you don't want those guys fouled out of the game for overtime. You wanted to make sure that you could keep them in that game and keep them a part of that process. So, well, anytime a team is in foul trouble, it makes it harder for them to come back. That's an added element that they have to battle through in order to come back, and Xavier did a great job last night. And the fact that they got into foul trouble early, right? Like, Texas's lead was built off of the fact that they were able to force Xavier to get into foul trouble early in the first half. You look at the way that Texas played. I mean, what, 20-something of Texas's points in the paint. They ended up having, like, I think they ended up having, like, 30-something, 40-something points in the paint. 27, I want to say, of those came in the first half. Xavier did a nice job of tightening down there on defense in the second half and only held them to 10 points in the paint. But also, at the same time, they weren't committing the fouls that they were committing in the first half as well. So I think when you combine those two things, that's really a big reason why they were able to battle back from being down 13, even while in foul trouble. And Marcus Foster even talked about it after the game. He said, defensively, we locked in and started getting more deflections. He said, we're a team that we live off of deflections and creating those turnover situations. When we're doing that, it's very hard to beat us. And he's absolutely right, because that was what turned the tide for Xavier and played into the favor of the Musketeers there in that game. So I really do think that Xavier heading on now to take on Illinois. Watch out for Xavier and Illinois. They'll play tomorrow, so it's still another day until they play. But that could potentially be a really, really interesting matchup between those two teams for sure. Xavier moving on with a big win over Texas. Texas is, we wait and see what Texas's decision is. I know Texas could make some coaching changes. That was kind of heading into the SEC tournament was a question with them of would they make a coaching change? What would happen with them if they got into the NCAA tournament? They made a little bit of a mini run in the SEC tournament that actually probably without that mini run in the SEC tournament probably would have actually kept them out. They probably, if they have not gone on that run in the SEC tournament in Nashville, they probably would not have been in one of these play-in games. They probably ended up would have been in the NIT, maybe gotten an invite to the NIT, and then definitely probably would have been looking for a new coach. But now I think it kind of buys you a little bit of good grace, the fact that you kind of sort of made the tournament, right? Like those play-in games aren't necessarily the tournament, but it's still kind of like being in the tournament. So I think, I don't know. Texas has got a lot to talk about and a lot to look at in the offseason, and they're going to have plenty of time to do it now that they're knocked out. We could see a new coaching change, a new coach come in there for Texas, and, you know, who knows who that could be, who knows who they could bring in. But right now, Texas has got a lot of things they need to look at, and coaching is just part of it. So we'll see what happens with the Longhorns now that they are officially out. Our other game last night, Mount St. Mary's tops American 83-72. Adebayo and Corelia, big for the Mountaineers, 22 points each. So 44 points combined for the 83 that Mount St. Mary's scored. You had Dallas Hobbs, who also had 17. He stepped up in a big way. Thought it was interesting after the game hearing him talking. He's like, oh, no, I was nervous. I don't think I've ever been that nervous playing. This was arguably and easily the biggest game I've played in my entire career. There were definitely nerves there. And then he goes out and he's the second highest scorer on the team with 17 points, with only Adebayo and Corelia ahead of him with 22. So, and he wasn't that far off from being one of, you know, he could have been another guy. A couple of extra shots go down for him over the course of the game, and he either could have been the team leader or he could have been right there with Adebayo and Corelia. So, I think a nice job there by Dallas Hobbs in that game to get those 17 points. I think really kind of a turning point in this game early on in a negative way for American was you've got Matt Rogers, who averages about 17, 18 points for you a game, and he's your one of your top scorers. And obviously he'd been dealing with a knee injury. He re-aggravated that knee injury within the first like 5 minutes of the game. Tried to play, but made it ultimately down until like the last couple of minutes of the first half and ultimately had to come out of the game and did not come back. That was a big loss and a big hit for American. Like I said, it's a guy who averages about 18 points per game. He only gave you 7. That is definitely, it's like kind of going back to what we talked about when Auburn lost to Texas A&M, that second to last game before the regular season was over. You know, you talked about how Broome performed in that game. He's a guy that normally gives them a lot better looks at shots and a lot more points, and he underperformed in that game against A&M, and it was a big reason why they struggled and lost that game. Kind of the same here for American. Without Matt Rogers into the game, it was tough for them to get anything going against Mount St. Mary's. So Mount St. Mary's will advance on to the round of 64, and it doesn't get any easier for them, though. That's one thing with Xavier. Xavier goes on and takes on not Louisville. They go on and take on Illinois, right? So they are going to move on and take on a 6 seed as an 11 seed. Little bit more of a favorable matchup. Gives them an opportunity to possibly pull an upset there in that game. And that, by the way, could be one of our big upsets to watch for tomorrow's games in the tournament. You'll just have to tune into the glass half full tomorrow when we talk about that and find out. But as far as Mount St. Mary's, they've now got to go take on Duke. Arguably one of the, if you had to pick three teams to win this NCAA tournament, Duke is going to be one of them, right? It just kind of depends on who you are. I think some people would pick, you know, Duke, Florida, Auburn. Some people are picking Duke, Florida, Houston. Some people are going Auburn, Duke, Houston. I think either way, if you're picking any of the one seeds, you got a solid chance at being correct on that in this tournament. But again, Mount St. Mary's, just it's kind of like Alabama State. It's, yeah, congratulations, you won your play-in game, but now you've got to play one of the better teams in the entire tournament, and it's a team that's probably going to beat you by about 30 points, and it shouldn't even be close. Like, this game should be over at halftime. So, again, my message to Mount St. Mary's, the same as what I told Alabama State yesterday. Enjoy it. Have fun. You just want a game to play yourself into the NCAA tournament. A lot of these players from Alabama State and Mount St. Mary's probably not going to play at the next level, right? So this is probably it for them, especially if they're a senior. Go and enjoy it. Live every moment to the fullest and enjoy every second you can of this tournament, because no offense to Alabama State and no offense to Mount St. Mary's, you're not going to be in the tournament long. So enjoy it while you're there. Make the most of your 1 or 2 days in the NCAA tournament. How about some of the games we're going to see today right here on the ESPN Pensacola 1330 AM 99.1 FM, as well as numerous streaming sites. I'm sure there's probably like three or four that have rights to carry in these games. By the way, you're listening to The Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola 1330 AM 99.1 FM. I am your host, Jordan Glass. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to be a part of today's show and join the conversation, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Some of the games we're going to see today, I mentioned Auburn and Alabama State already. Auburn's just too good, too strong, too big, too physical, too fast, too everything. Auburn should win this game by 30 points, maybe even 40 points. If this is a close ball game, Auburn did not show up and play well. This is one of those games. Coaches hate these types of games because these are those games to where, honestly and truthfully, all your team has to do is walk into the building and just play the game, and they should win. Coaches hate this because that's when players kind of tend to, you know, get a little lazy, get a little lackadaisical out there, and that's when crazy things happen. But at the end of the day, even if crazy things happen, I still don't see Alabama State in any way, shape, or form. And no offense to the Hornets. They've had a great season. They played a great game on Tuesday night. I just don't see them having enough to get past an Auburn Tiger team. Like I said, Auburn, too big, too fast, too tall, too strong, too physical, too everything. Right? So I think this game's probably going to be a little ugly. It's probably going to be, you know, over, like I said, over at halftime. It should be over at halftime. There's no reason why Alabama State should be in this game whatsoever. Our next game on the docket for today, we're going to be looking at, we're going to look at some more later on in the show. This is just kind of for right now. How about Georgia and Gonzaga? This is actually a very interesting matchup, if you ask me, right? So with Georgia in this game taking on Gonzaga, you have an 8 and a 9 seed, and I know we have another 8 and 9 seed matchup starting us off here with Louisville and Creighton. So we have 2 8 and 9 seed matchups that are really going to be two great games today. But this Gonzaga Georgia one, you look at these teams statistically, they are almost identical, right? Like as far as like shooting percentage from the field, they are separated by like 0.1%. Like that's it. These teams are very similar to each other. I think it's going to be a great game. Gonzaga is favored right now. I believe last time I checked, it was like 6.5 that Gonzaga is favored by. But here's the thing. Georgia can win this game. This is not a game that Georgia is going to have to do anything crazy to do to win. They just have to show up and play. If they can play a solid, full game of basketball, I think that they're going to have an opportunity to win. The only problem with that is that they have Mike White as their head coach. And if you've been listening to the show, you know how I feel about Mike White as the head coach. And he's got the track record to back up my feelings for him as a head coach. It's not like my feelings for him are unbiased or just, you know, unwarranted and biased for whatever reason. No, there's actually plenty of evidence to prove that he's a guy that if he builds a lead, he's going to take his foot off the gas and he's going to open the door for the other team to come back. And when they start coming back, his teams are never able to get it going again, and they ultimately end up losing that game. So for me today, if Georgia is going to win, if Georgia is going to advance on and possibly take on the winner of Houston and SIU Edwardsville, which probably will be Houston, if that 9-seed Georgia team is going to move on to take on the 1-seed Houston Cougars, they are going to have to play not Mike White basketball today. If they build a lead, you got to hold that lead. If you get your foot on their throat, do not let up. Keep applying pressure. You have got to have, and especially in the NCAA tournament, really in general in college basketball, but especially in the NCAA tournament, you have got to have that Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, LeBron James killer mentality, right? Of I'm going to put my foot on your throat, and I'm not going to let up until the game is over. Because the minute you let up, you give them breathing room. You give them an opportunity to fight back and battle back into the game. And like I said, we've seen time and time again with teams that Mike White has coached, whether it's, I mean, literally, whoever it's been, they have struggled when they give up a big lead of getting any type of rhythm back going. And Mike White, he's above 500 in the NCAA tournament, but not by much. 6-4 all time as a head coach in the NCAA tournament. There's not a lot on his resume that make you feel comfortable that Georgia can knock off Gonzaga in this game. Statistically, these two teams are close. So this game should be close. It should be a good one. And if Mike White can get out of his own way and not make the same mistakes that he always makes, Georgia is going to have a chance at winning this ballgame. But right now, I got to lean towards Gonzaga just because what I've seen from Georgia. Again, they're a team that just can't seem to get out of their own way. They build up a lead, they back off, and then they can't ever get anything going. Or they just fall flat right from the start and get embarrassed. So we'll see how it plays out for that game. Again, that'll come up later on today. For Tennessee and Wolford, this is an interesting game right here. I know a lot of people are going to look at this and they're going to pick the Terriers to maybe pull an upset. I don't know if they will. Tennessee is very good out of the SEC. Tennessee's good in the SEC, but they're even better against non-conference opponents. As a matter of fact, they're 13-0 on the year against non-conference opponents. If you are not in the SEC, you are not beating Tennessee. And that's the way it's been all year long. Tennessee, the big thing for me, kind of like what we talked about with you know, Xavier being in foul trouble last night against Texas, it makes it harder to overcome point differentials and point deficits. We saw that for Tennessee in the SEC championship game against Florida. They had three or four guys, including a couple of their star players, get into foul trouble where they had four fouls on them, could not get that fifth one or else they were done for and would not play in the rest of the game. That changed how aggressive Tennessee could be down the last few minutes of that game. So for Tennessee today against this Wolford team, you've got to stay out of foul trouble. That is going to be the big thing for Tennessee. Stay out of foul trouble. Because here's the thing. If they can stay out of foul trouble, if they're not getting whistles, they're going to be able to roll just about anybody they're facing up until they get to the Sweet 16, maybe even the Elite 8. Right? Because coming out of this, they'll take on the winner of Utah State and UCLA in the round of 32. They should have no problem there. Then they'll either get the winner of Illinois Xavier or the winner of Kentucky and Troy. They'll get any of those teams in the Sweet 16. So like I said, Tennessee should have no issue until they get to the Sweet 16, Elite 8, maybe even Final Four. So if they just stay out of foul trouble, if they hit shots and stay out of foul trouble, they're going to be just fine in this game today against Wolford. The glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. I'm Jordan Glass. Thank you so much for tuning into today's show. If you'd like to be a part of it, you can do so 850-623-1330. Last one we're going to talk about before we head to a timeout, Texas A&M and Yale. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, it's an SEC school versus an Ivy League school. This is, yeah, okay, that's another one that's going to be over. It's going to be over at halftime. We don't have to worry about this game. Not so fast. I got to hit you with the not so fast, my friend, from Lee Corso. Or I guess since it's college basketball, maybe I add a little Dick Vitale to it. And not so fast, baby! I think Yale has an opportunity at winning this game. And before you scoff at that, hear me out. Yale is averaging about 82 points per game. In the last 10 games, Yale is averaging 80 points, 33 rebounds, 14 assists, 5 steals, and 3 blocks, and they're 9-1 in their last 10. This is a very good Yale basketball team. Do they match up size-wise? No. Texas A&M is a bigger team. But we've also seen Texas A&M be inconsistent, where they've gone on streaks, where they've lost, what, 5 in a row? 4 or 5 in a row on the course of the season? We've seen Texas A&M look really, really good, like a top 10 team. And then we've also seen them look like a team that shouldn't be ranked. This game is going to depend on what Texas A&M team shows up. And that's the bottom line of it. Whichever Texas A&M team shows up is what's going to, you know, essentially decide this game. If it's an inconsistent A&M team, if the Aggies can't get into a rhythm early, watch out for this one. Because Yale has the shooting. They have the firepower. Like I said, averaging 82 points per game. A&M's averaging right around 71. Difference in competition, yes. But once you get into the tournament, that's stats that matter. So watch out for this game. This could possibly be our upset of the day. Yale over Texas A&M. I'm just saying. I know a lot of people don't think that. But you're looking at a 13 seed over a 4 seed. We've seen crazier things happen in the NCAA tournament. We'll take our first time out. When we come back, more of the glass half full right after this.
Hi, I'm Bill Clark, host of War Eagle Weekly here on ESPN Radio. Now that college football regular season has come to a close, tune into War Eagle Weekly Thursdays from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. for the latest on Auburn basketball, as well as other Tiger sports-related news and analysis. My co-host, Austin Price, and I will bring you up to date on the latest Auburn basketball results and preview upcoming games. Tune into War Eagle Weekly every Thursday, 10 to 11 a.m. right here on ESPN Pensacola. War Eagle.
You could win $100,000 by joining our ESPN Pensacola 1330 Perfect Bracket Challenge, presented by Batteries Plus. Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com.
It's the glass half full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Here on this Thursday morning at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome back into the glass half full. I am Jordan Glass. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. We're going to step away from NCAA tournament coverage for just a few minutes. We'll get back to it in some of the other games we're going to see later on today for sure. But real quick, I want to kind of go over this story that I came across. It's talking about for the NFL in 2025. The 8 proposals of rule changes heading to league meetings as we are getting ready for those to happen. And, of course, one of the top ones, banning of the tush push. In a proposal that would like to get rid of the tush push, it's actually being pushed, if you will, by the Green Bay Packers. They want language that prohibits an offensive player from pushing a teammate who is lined up directly behind the snapper and receives the snap immediately at the snap. So basically, whether you're a running back, a wide receiver, whoever lines up and takes the direct snap from under center, nobody that's lined up behind you can run up and push you. They're saying that this is about a pace of play as well as player safety. I'm trying to think back, and any of the times I've seen the tush push happen or the brotherly shove, whatever you want to call it, has there resulted in any major injuries? I don't really think it has. Not as much as like hip drop tackles or anything like that that the NFL has gotten rid of the last couple of years. Not as bad as those. There may be one or two instances where there was some injuries because of it. But for the most part, it seems like it's used in short down yardage distance. So it's, you know, it's a very quick play. So as far as pace of play, it doesn't seem like it slows down the game, right? Like if anything, the tush push brotherly shove, whatever you want to call it, it keeps the clock running, so pace of play doesn't really seem to be affected by it. The player injury aspect of it, I don't think we have enough scenarios where a player has been injured because of it to where that should be the biggest concern, right? So I'm very confused and very, very curious to see what the NFL decides to do with the tush push or, again, the brotherly shove, whatever you want to call it. But it is up on the docket, thanks to the Green Bay Packers, to potentially be eliminated and made to where you can't do it. Although there are loopholes. Bring a receiver in motion, bring a running back in motion, have him at the last minute as the ball snapped right before he gets behind the quarterback, he's still in motion, have the ball snapped, and then just have him turn up and push the guy. He wasn't lined up behind him, he was brought in motion from the slot. See? There's caveats to it where teams can still run this play. So even if they pass this, I still think we're going to see different versions of the tush push or brotherly shove as we continue to go through the NFL. Because, again, if we just change the verbiage to where the player that's lined up behind the guy taking the snap can't be the one pushing him, expect to see teams bring guys from the slot and then have him be the guy that pushes him, right? Because that's a loophole. It's a workaround. Everybody loves a good loophole. Some of the other rules that we could expect to see or potentially see changed, the Detroit Lions would actually like to eliminate offenses from getting automatic first downs when defenses commit illegal contact or holding penalties. So, like defensive holding, defensive pass interference, things like that that result in automatic first downs, they want to automatically take off that first down. So, basically, if a team is facing a second and 20, and since the Lions are the team that want to remove this, let's say the Lions are the team on defense, they get called for a pass interference call. It's a 15-yard penalty. Now in the NFL, it's a 15-yard penalty, automatic first down. So basically what they would be saying is if it's a 15-yard penalty, instead of giving them the automatic first down, mark it off the 15 yards. If it's not enough for them to pick up that first down and move the sticks, then it'd be third and three or whatever. I feel like this is kind of one of those things to where this can pass or it cannot pass. I don't really think it's going to affect the NFL because most of the time because the NFL, remember, the NFL is a spot of the ball foul with pass interference. So if the guy is past the first down marker and you go, oh, well, ball's going to be placed at the spot of the foul, that's still going to give them the yardage for the first down. So I think that this one right here by the Detroit Lions, it's one of those things that for me personally, you could take it or leave it. I don't think it really is going to be anything that matters too much. So this is, again, kind of one of those things where you just shrug your shoulders at and go, okay, if they get rid of the automatic first down, wouldn't the penalty still give them the first down? So they're still picking up, they're still moving the sticks and picking that up. So it doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't, but some of these teams, they just like throwing these in there because they get the opportunity to. You know, they get the opportunity to go to the NFL and say, hey, this is a rule that we have in place right now, and we want to change it. Sometimes it makes good sense. Sometimes it doesn't. How about the Eagles? They're getting involved with this. They would actually like to bring postseason overtime rules to the regular season as well. The current regular season overtime period is only 10 minutes long, and the team that gets the ball first can win if they score a touchdown. In the postseason, though, for the NFL, both teams will get a possession and, at least once. So even if a touchdown is scored by the first team that touches the ball, then the other team is still going to get an opportunity to match that and continue the period on. So I think that that's great. I really do. I like the postseason overtime rules where they both get a possession, even if a touchdown is scored. So I am all for that, and I think that it would be pretty cool to see that happen in the regular season as well as overtime in the postseason as well. So we'll see what happens with that, but I'm definitely a big proponent. I've even said on the show multiple times, maybe for the NFL, they just adopt the college rule, right? Just adopt the college rule for overtime and everybody be on the same rules. That way when you have these guys coming from college into the NFL, they no longer have to worry about changing and understanding these overtime rules because, well, it's the same as college. I understand not everybody wants the rules in overtime to be the same in college as they are in the NFL. I get that. But if this can be a compromise to where we have the same rules across the board, also, isn't it a bit asinine a little bit, just a little bit to have a different rule in the postseason as well as in the regular season? Right? That's like saying that you can call face masks in the regular season, but you can't do it in the postseason. Like, what's the difference between the two? There should be no difference, right? If it's a penalty, it's a penalty. Postseason, regular season, preseason, it doesn't matter. Overtime should be the same. Preseason, regular season, postseason, it doesn't matter. So I am all for this by the Lions right here to make that happen. And they say that it's about competitive equality or competitive equity, sorry. It is. You know, it shouldn't be they scored a touchdown, game's over. You should get a chance to respond. And then if you don't respond, then, yeah, the game can be over. Honestly, I'm all for playing the whole period. Just play the whole period like it's a fifth quarter. Get rid of the sudden death rule of if you score a touchdown first, then you know, the game's over. Or you score a touchdown, then, okay, if Team A scores a touchdown, Team B's got to score a touchdown to respond. I say just play the whole quarter out. Make it like a fifth quarter, much like we do in the NBA, much like we do with college basketball. Just play the whole period out. Whatever the score is at the end is what the score is. If we're tied, we may play another quarter. Maybe you shorten the quarters. Maybe make it keep the 10-minute quarter aspect of the regular season. Carry that on through. Play the whole period. Right? I like that idea. I think you play the whole period rather than having these sudden death stipulations that could lead to teams, winning or losing a game in a manner that they deem unfairly. You play the whole period, then all they can do is if they lose the game, say, well, you should have played better. Another one up on the docket here for NFL rule changes for 2025, preventing IR players from counting on the roster list. And I'm all for this. If you are on the IR, you should not count to the 90-player roster because you are not playing. You cannot be used. You're on the IR. You are out of the – I mean, look at Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey was on the IR for majority of the season last year for the 49ers. But he had to be a part of the 90-man roster limit because he's still listed on there. So they've still got to list him on there even though he's not playing. That's wasting a spot on the 90-man active roster that could go to somebody who could step up and help fill that role. I am all for doing away with this club bylaw that players who are on the injured reserve count towards that maximum 90-player limit. They shouldn't. They're not playing. You don't count practice squad members on that 90-day or that 90-player limit, do you? No, because they're not playing in the game. Don't count guys on the IR. When they come off the IR, then yes, they need to be added to that, and it needs to be adjusted. If you have 90 guys and you have a guy come off of the IR, then yes, you need to adjust it and work, maybe release a guy or move him off of the 90-man active roster and put that guy who's coming off the IR back on it. Yes, that will be something that has to be juggled. But again, you don't count practice squad players as part of that 90-player roster that you have the limit on. You don't, because they're not playing. So you shouldn't be counting members on the IR as well. Let's see, some of these other rules. How about this one from the Pittsburgh Steelers? Allowing teams to have contact with free agents during the illegal tampering window. So that two-day window before free agency starts. Right? You have that two-day window before free agency starts. The Steelers would actually like to be able to contact possible free agents and talk to them. And basically, what they're saying is not make a contract offer. This is not a situation where we're going to call up this guy and we're going to bring in an offer. No, no, no. This is not what we're going to do. What we are going to do is we are going to come in. We're going to make a phone call. We're going to have a FaceTime. We're going to have Skype. We're going to have a Zoom, whatever, with this free agent player. Gauge interest on whether he wants to come and visit and talk to us or not. And if he does, we will set up a trip. And then once free agency opens, he'll have that trip scheduled and ready to go, and he can go ahead and come in. I like it. I think it's a great idea, and I think one of the reasons why the Steelers are doing this right now is because of the situation with Aaron Rodgers, because they are still sitting waiting for an answer there. However, if they knew what was going to happen with Aaron Rodgers ahead of time, they could have contacted him during what is deemed a tampering period and set up a meeting, set up a couple of phone calls or whatever with him, and then once they had the opportunity to do that, once he was officially a free agent, bring him in, talk to him. The decisions get made a lot quicker if this is the case. And I absolutely am here for it. 110% I'm here for it. One of the final ones to look at as far as possible rule changes for the NFL. This one involves K-balls. If you don't know what a K-ball is, K-ball is the special ball they use for special teams. So it's you know, the K stands for kicking. It's the ones that the field goal kickers like, the punters, you know, kickoff specialists. They all have different balls. They like it to be a different shape, different, PSI level or whatever. They maybe be a little bit more muddier than some of the other ones. And they just want to make it to where the K-balls are prepared the day before with the game balls. So game balls are prepared the Saturday before the Sunday game, or the Sunday before the Monday game, or the Wednesday before the Thursday game. Game balls are always prepared the day before the game is actually played. K-balls are prepared the day of the game. So this is being proposed by the Eagles, the Commanders, the Vikings, the Raiders, the Ravens, the Browns, and the Texans. They are all working together on this to push the NFL to say, you know what, let's actually start preparing the K-balls before the day before the game like we do with the game balls. Rather than doing them day of, let's go ahead and let's prepare them the day before the game instead of day of. So that's just kind of an interesting one there. A preference, I guess, game day operations, modify the permit to clubs to prepare those K-balls, through the same process of game balls, right? They use 60 K-balls over the course of a game, so you just kind of lump those in with the rest of the game balls, and, you'd be able to get those prepared all within the same time frame. That's kind of the weirder one on the list, but it's on the list, so I felt like mentioning it. But, so there are your eight probable rule changes that we will see. They'll go to league meetings and there'll be votes on them. People will discuss them. There'll be long conversations of why we should or shouldn't do this or do that. I'm very invested on a few of these. I'm curious to see what happens with the tush push for sure. That's been such a big part of the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm also looking for the overtime rule. That's definitely going to be interesting. Contacting free agents in the tampering period, that's going to be another good one. And then you know what? Just for fun, just for kicks and giggles, I want to see what happens with the K-balls. Are we going to have a situation where those get prepared the day up before the game, just like game balls do, or if they're going to stay to getting prepared the day of the game? Again, nothing that really matters too much as far as the game on the field, but still it's going to be interesting to see what the ruling is and why for that particular one. We'll take a timeout when we come back. More of the Glass Half Full right after this.
Bamboo Willie's on the Pensacola Beach Boardwalk is the place to go to watch your favorite NCAA March Madness game, along with great live entertainment. NCAA March Madness can be viewed from 18 different TVs March 18th through April 7th. They'll have bucket of beer specials and NCAA basketball with a view of beautiful Pensacola Beach. It's Bamboo Willie's on the Pensacola Beach Boardwalk. Find them on Facebook and check them out online at BambooWillies.com for more details.
The Big Bamboo!
Start your day off right with Unsportsmanlike with Evan, Chris, and Michelle. Mornings 5 to 9 on ESPN Pensacola.
1330 AM, 99.1 FM.
It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola. 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Now 9:45 here on this Thursday morning, getting you ready for the round of 64 for the NCAA tournament. We're going to have lots of great games for you all day long right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM, including coming up at 11:15. So in about, what are we talking about? About an hour and a half from now, we'll have Creighton and Louisville taking each other on. Then at 2:15, it'll be McNeese and Clemson. Then later this evening at 6 o'clock, Arkansas taking on Kansas. And at 9 o'clock, the nightcap, UC San Diego taking on Michigan. That will be our first four games for the NCAA tournament with the Westwood One coverage of the NCAA tournament. So be sure to tune in for all of those games and many more. Like I said, if you're going to be at work today, you're wanting to catch up, you want to know what's happening with Creighton and Louisville, you want to know what's happening with the first half of McNeese and Clemson while you're closing out your workday here on this Thursday, download the ESPN Pensacola app, listen off of our website. If you got a radio at your desk, tune in to ESPN Pensacola 99.1 or 1330 on AM side of that radio dial, and you can just pop a little earbud in. That way you don't get in trouble with the boss, especially if you got a boss that likes to hover this time of year. Also, don't let your boss give you any grief about doing an NCAA bracket tournament. Right? Like, don't let them see you filling that out, like, on your lunch break and go, are you really doing that on company hours? Yeah. How's your bracket doing? Is it busted yet? Did you get knocked out in a round of four play-in games yet? I guarantee you they got one. Just hit them back with that. Ask them how their bracket's doing. If they give you grief, ask them how their bracket's doing. They'll leave you alone. They'll leave you alone. Our first game we got today, like I mentioned, on ESPN Pensacola is going to be Creighton and Louisville. This is going to be an interesting matchup. It's an 8 seed versus a 9 seed. Louisville is kind of one of those teams that, look, they're 27-7. They were 20-3 in the ACC. They're pretty impressive. You know, you look at them right now, comparing them to the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays' record in the Big East, 17-6. The big issue here for me is Creighton from the three-point line. 33.9% from the three-point line for Creighton. And you look at Louisville and their shots from the field, 45.4. Shooting is going to be the key in this game. Who can get the big shots when it's needed, right? I mean, if you kind of match these two teams up, Louisville 9-1 over their last two. They're averaging about 77 points per game in that period. Blue Jays are 6-4, but they're averaging about 74 points per game. The only problem is that they're giving up over 70 points as well. When you look at Louisville, they're giving up about 65, 66 points per game. So Louisville kind of keeping Creighton at bay and not allowing them to score points, but then also Louisville being able to hit shots at a higher percentage rate than Creighton will. I think that's really going to be what decides this game. This game is probably it's going to be close. This game is going to be a great way to start off the round of 64. It is going to be a really good game, but I've got to lean a little bit towards Louisville and how they shoot the basketball just a little bit more than I would towards Creighton. So in this game, Creighton and Louisville coming up here at the at 11:15 on ESPN Pensacola. I'm going to give the edge there. I'm going to give the edge there to Louisville in that one. Another game we've got, Arkansas and Kansas. That'll be the game at 6:15 right here on ESPN Pensacola. Two evenly matched teams, I think, as far as, I mean, you look at the record, 20-13, 21-12. These teams are you know, kind of, you know, mirrors of each other a little bit, but there are things that Kansas do. There's things that let me get proper grammar for you here for a second. There are things that Kansas does better than Arkansas, and I think ultimately that is going to be what decides this game. Kansas, I mean, you look at them in their last 10 games. They're 5-5, yes, but again, they're averaging about 75 points per game, just right there around 34 rebounds a game, 17 assists, 6 steals, and 4 blocks. They're shooting 45.5% from the field. I really do like the way that they are playing, the way that they that 33.8% are 38.8% on rebounds. You compare that to the Razorbacks, 31.4%. That is going to be crucial in this game. Who can rebound better? Who's going to get those second chance point opportunities? And if it goes Kansas's way, They should have no problem not only winning, but covering the spread as well. Right now, 5.5. So I think Kansas has a great opportunity here. Arkansas on the other end. Sorry, Razorback fans. I had to do that. Arkansas on the other end. I will say for them, they do have an ability to score. About 76 points per game in their last 10 games is what they're averaging. But again, kind of like what we were talking about with Creighton and Louisville. Yes, Creighton was scoring a lot, but they're also allowing a lot of people to score as well. Same for Arkansas. Yes, they're averaging 76 points per game, but they're averaging giving up about 75 as well. So where is that balance going to come from? I think, again, it's going to come down to rebounding and those second-chance opportunities. I really do. So we'll see how that game plays out. Some other games we have coming up today, UC San Diego and Michigan, that will be our nightcap. Again, kind of talking about the Auburn-Alabama State game, about Auburn just being too big, too strong, too fast, too physical. That's going to be the same thing for Michigan to get against UC San Diego. UC San Diego is not a bad team. But again, at the end of the day, it's a step up in competition than what they're playing as a 12 seed coming into this tournament. They are 30-4. They do a lot of things well, but Michigan is one of those teams that a lot of people are kind of looking at on this side of the bracket there in the South to possibly be a team that upsets Auburn in a Sweet 16 matchup, or possibly even maybe getting to an Elite Eight matchup against the Michigan State. So we'll see what happens there. But again, I think Michigan's got too much over UC San Diego. They should be able to win this game. Same for Texas Tech with UNC Wilmington. Again, you look at UNC Wilmington in this game against Texas Tech. That is a game that is it is a 14 seed taking on a 3 seed. Again, UNC Wilmington is a good basketball team, but when you get into these NCAA tournaments, it's a step up in competition. And that's going to be my biggest question for not only UNC Wilmington, but UC San Diego. Can they maintain that level of play? If they can, it can have a chance if they keep it close. But I don't see either one of these two games being close. I think Michigan get the win and they move on. Utah State and UCLA should be a great one. That's definitely going to be a fun game to keep an eye on. And then Omaha and St. John's. Look, if you're new to NCAA tournaments, don't ever go against a Patino in March or April. St. John's has a Patino as their head coach. Actually, they have the Patino as their head coach. Never go against a team that's coached by a Patino in March or April. They're always going to show up. They're always going to be ready to go. There's been a couple of moments this year where he's kind of had to light a fire under that team at halftime, but you've seen what they're able to do in that second half when they come out and they just destroy whatever deficit they were facing and go on to win that game. So St. John should have no problem with Omaha tonight. They should advance on, and looking at this game, they'll have to take on the winner of Kansas and Arkansas. Honestly, they should have no issue there. I really don't see St. John's having an issue until the Elite Eight when they take on more than likely Florida Gators at the top of that West bracket, West division of that bracket. So we'll see how it plays out. But we're going to have a lot of great basketball starting in about an hour and 15 to 20 minutes from now at 11:15. And like I said, you can hear that first game, Creighton and Louisville, right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 a.m., 99.1 FM. We'll take our final timeout when we come back. Your headline roundup, and we'll wrap things up with today's glass half full right after this.
Calling all sports enthusiasts in Pensacola. Are you tired of missing out on the hottest sports debates and breaking news? Look no further than ESPN Pensacola, your go-to sports talk station. From morning to night, our lineup of passionate hosts will bring you the in-depth analysis and lively discussions you crave. Whether it's football, basketball, baseball, or any other sport, we've got the inside scoop. Tune in to 1330 AM, 99.1 FM, and join the excitement. ESPN Pensacola, where sports never stop.
You can win $100,000 by joining our ESPN Pensacola 1330 Perfect Bracket Challenge, presented by Batteries Plus. Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com.
It's the glass half full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Welcome back in into the glass half full. Time to take a look at some of the top headlines in the world of sports with your headline roundup. We do this just about every day around this time. Want to take a look at those top headlines. We'll start in the NBA. There's a source that says Bill Chisholm agrees to buy the Boston Celtics for $6.1 million. Chisholm is the managing partner at Symphony Technology Group, and he's agreed to make the purchase of the Boston Celtics from the Gruzbeck family, again, for $6.1 billion. It's the largest sale for a franchise in North America sports history, surpassing the Commanders being sold for $6.05 billion back just a couple of years ago in 2023. So some new ownership there for the Boston Celtics. Looks like the Minnesota Vikings are agreeing to a deal with Rondell Moore. Rondell Moore did not play in 2024, but he's looking to get back at it, and will be doing so with the Minnesota Vikings. The Houston Texans agree to a one-year, $35.6 million extension for Danielle Hunter. So you'll definitely be seeing him back there on the defensive side of the ball as one of those defensive anchors in that front seven. And then an interesting story out of Stanford that we're going to continue to keep an eye on. Reports find that Stanford's head football coach, Troy Taylor, actually bullied and belittled several staffers. And we'll have to see how this is going. They're doing an investigation of this. We'll talk more about this. Maybe we'll have more for you coming up on tomorrow's Glass Half Full. But that is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Jordan Glass. Have a great Thursday. War Eagle Weekly coming up